having a wild time.
I really don't need to take too deep.
Good morning, everyone. Let's call the meeting to order of the Telecom Regulation Infrastructure Division. Welcome. What we're going to do this morning is begin with some introductions. Say who you are and maybe where you represent or anything else you want to say about yourself. And we'll go on from there. And maybe we'll start with Representative Saylor. We'll just go around the table.
Representative Rita Saylor, District 2B, way up north, where we have received a little broadband issues from time to time. So I'm very happy to be serving on this committee for my second year, and I look forward to a productive session.
Representative Robin Brown, I am District 27A, way down south, and we have a few broadband issues as well. So looking forward to getting to know everybody on the committee and learning the issues and doing some good work for Minnesota.
Welcome.
Good morning. Leah Mullick, North St. Paul, Maplewood, and looking forward to being on this committee.
Good morning, Mary Kissmeyer, District 16B, Sherburne County, an ex-urban area. So a little different than our way north and way south folks in regards to that. Looking forward to serving on this committee.
I'm Joe Hoppe, the representative from Chaffee and Janhassen. It's too early to think.
Bob Ewer, Count Research.
John Wright, Committee Administrator.
And I'm Sheldon Johnson, the chair of the represent Southeast St. Paul.
Mary South, Committee Assistant.
I'm Sandy Nation. I represent 38A, which is the centrally western Eagan and a portion of Burnsville. I'm the vice chair of the committee, and I met with both my councils this week, and they are really excited about getting faster speeds.
Good morning. My name is Connie Dempsey. I'm the representative from 33B, and I am looking forward to learning much and contributing as much as I can on this committee. So thank you for having me.
Ian Marsh, Republican, Kakapu Research.
And I know we have a couple pages here. If you want to introduce yourself.
My name is Brandon Wardlinger. I'm a page from Western Illinois.
My name is Tom McKinnon.
Very good. Well, welcome one and all, especially the new members as we move forward in this committee. It can be a little complicated and daunting sometimes, particularly the terminology, but we have some excellent staff here and help, so feel free to ask whenever you have any questions. Don't hesitate to do so. I just want to talk for a few minutes about the direction of the committee as I see it for the next few months and mention the rules that are probably in your folder. Just kind of refer to them. The directions of the telecom committee, essentially the goal for me and that I've been looking at is to improve access to technology, especially broadband. And to that extent, we have a broadband task force that's working on a variety of issues set forth in statute. And we'll be hearing from them later this session what the results are of some of the work that they're doing. So we'll get a report from them as to where that's at. I'm interested in encouraging a regulatory environment that fosters competition, a level playing field, looking for innovation and new technologies that move these issues forward. So obviously government can't do that, but we want to hear from private companies and businesses where things are at and what we can do to help encourage and foster that competition level playing field. Also note we have a statewide franchising study that's going to be forthcoming later this session as well regarding cable TV. We'll be taking a look at that, looking at the results, and discussing that within our committee. Consumer protection issues are certainly things that come up on occasion, so that'll be something that we'll be looking at as well. And then lastly, looking at the PUC and maintaining a good working relationship with them and hearing what they have to say about the direction of telecommunications from the agency perspective. So those are just some of the things that we'll be looking at and discussing and talking about during our time on our telecom division. There are some rules in the folder there. They're pretty much boilerplate rules that are, pretty straightforward. For me, the long and short of it is we're going to try to start as much as possible around 8:30, close to 8:30 if possible, and we'll try to end at a timely manner at 10 a.m., so we'll try to stick with those beginning and ending times as well as possible. And then the other thing, really important things, are John and Mary's phone numbers in there. If you have any questions or if there's anything coming up, just feel free to give them a call. If you see me on the house floor or wherever, come talk to me about whatever concerns or issues you have, and I'd be more than willing to talk to you. So, Lieutenant Hoppy?
Mr. Chair, I have a question. Will we ever cancel this early morning meeting if it gets really cold out in Minnesota?
I'd have to check with Representative Brewley on that question. We'll keep working on it.
Eddie, check.
I did come across an article this summer while traversing the state that I think is apropos to some of the issues that they're going to be coming before us, and I think kind of frames and puts into context some of the telecommunications history and directions. I just want to read it. It's pretty short, but I think it might mean something. It goes like this. After having dug to a depth of 10 meters last year, Scottish scientists found traces of copper wire dating back 100 years and came to the conclusion that their ancestors had a telephone network back then. Not to be outdone, a British scientist dug to a depth of 20 meters, and shortly after, headlines read, British archaeologists have found traces of 200-year-old copper wire and have concluded their ancestors already had an advanced high-tech communications network 100 years earlier than the Scots. And a week later, the Nordic Club, Minot, North Dakota newsletter reported the following. After digging as deep as 30 meters in cornfields near Minot, Ole Johnson, no relation to me, a self-taught archaeologist, reported that he found absolutely nothing, and Johnson therefore concluded North Dakota had already gone wireless 300 years ago. So I think that's something we want to think about. Today we're going to look at digital television transition, and just to put that into context, federal law requires all full-power television stations in the U.S. to cease analog broadcasting and to broadcast digital-only transmission, as it's currently stated, after February 17, 2009. And this process is usually referred to as digital television transition. And we're going to hear some testimony today about what that means and what the implications might be for citizens in Minnesota and to perhaps our work on the telecommunications committee. And to start things off, we're very fortunate to have a gentleman from the FCC, Bill Friedman, and he has had the opportunity to testify in a variety of settings and was gracious enough to come here this morning and share with us some of his thoughts and perspectives on where things are at with the digital transition. So with that, Mr. Friedman, if you would, for the record, just state who you are and what you represent, we'll go ahead with your testimony.
Sure. My name is William D. Friedman. I am Associate Chief of the Media Bureau of the Federal Communications Commission in Washington, and I want to thank the committee for this invitation to come and talk to you about the digital transition. We are engaged in substantial outreach throughout the country to let consumers know about the transition, let them know what they need to do to prepare for the transition and continue to enjoy the programming of our local stations, but just as importantly, let them know that there are a lot of people that don't need to do anything to prepare for the transition. There seems to be a lot of misinformation out there, and what I and about 200 of my colleagues at the Commission are doing is going across the country to talk to groups, talk to stations, talk to newspapers, talk to folks like you, to try to get the information out, to arm people with the facts so they know what they need to do and they can do it. Because unless a substantial group of viewers takes action before the transition date, the day after when they turn on their TV sets, they will receive nothing but interference. And we think that that's important to make sure that that doesn't happen for a couple of reasons. Obviously, we want everybody in the country to be able to continue to enjoy the entertainment programming that they enjoy over their local stations. But just as importantly, we want them to continue to have access to the news and public affairs information that they get from their stations, and information at times of crisis, like extreme weather, which I've heard a rumor happens here from time to time. TV stations provide a vital link and lifeline to a lot of folks, particularly people that live in remote areas. And we just want to make sure that on February 18th, the day after the scheduled transition date, everybody still has access to their television programming. What I would like to do is go over briefly what the transition is and why we're where we're at, and then go into the subject of who's going to be affected and what actions they can and should take to be prepared for the transition. The transition relates to the channels that the FCC allocates to every full-power television station to broadcast programming to its viewers. Since the beginning of television 50, 60 years ago, these channels have been what are known as analog. The technology is analog. And as digital technology has developed, just as digital technology has replaced CDs, records with CDs, and DVDs with videotapes, and all kinds of other digital applications, engineers have found that the use of digital channels for the delivery of broadcast signals is much more efficient than the use of analog channels. And as a result, in 1996, Congress enacted a law that directed my agency, the FCC, to allocate a second digital channel to every full-power station in the country. The idea was that there would be a hard date by which these stations had to stop operating on their old analog channels and operate only on their new digital channels. And by having them operate in this dual mode, it didn't close anybody off, because to the extent that viewers didn't have equipment that could receive the digital channels, they would continue to receive the analog channels that were simultaneously airing until such time as they did whatever they had to do to get the digital channels. The benefits from this, I get a lot from people, why are you making us do this? You know, we're really happy with our televisions. You're making us buy new equipment. Don't you have anything better to do? And the answer is, no, I don't have anything better to do. Because, as I mentioned, the use of digital channels is much more efficient than the use of analog channels. What's going to happen is when all of the stations shut off their analog channels on February 17th, they're going to turn those channels back to the FCC, and we're going to use them for a number of other purposes. For example, the lessons of the last 8 or 9 years have shown us that there is a great need in the country for an interoperable public safety network whereby first responders, police departments and fire departments and rescue squads can communicate with each other freely and without interference when they go into an emergency situation. So we're going to use some of the spectrum that's freed up to set up that type of a system. We've also auctioned off a chunk of the spectrum to wireless companies to allow them the ability to provide faster service and advanced service, like advanced broadband. And they are ready, willing, and able to go. There are also benefits to TV stations and their viewers. The digital technology allows stations to provide a much clearer signal than folks get with analog. If you notice, with an analog signal, which is what you're probably getting now, the farther you go away from the transmitter site, the picture degrades, and sometimes you get ghosting, or you get interference, or the sound goes in and out when you really get into a fringe area, but you can still watch it and you can still make it out. With digital channels, it's either an X or an O. You either get it or you don't, and if you get it in crystal clear quality, and the sound is also superb as well. Also, with regard to pictures, digital technology allows stations to broadcast in high definition, which is a type of digital. And if you've ever seen one of these TVs in high definition, particularly watching nature films or sporting events, it's really breathtaking. I mean, when you watch a baseball game and you see a pitcher throw a curveball, you can actually watch the threads on the ball spin as the ball approaches the plate. So it's really something. The other primary benefit to viewers from digital operations is that it allows stations to do what's known as multicasting. As you know, when we license a broadcast station, they're licensed to a particular community, and one of their bedrock obligations is to figure out what the needs of the community are and treat those needs in the programming that they air. Right now, with an analog technology, a television station can provide only one stream of programming, one channel of programming. So there's one program on at 11, there's one on at 12, there's one on at 1, and so on and so forth. What multicasting allows stations to do is air multiple channels of programming. So a station can provide, say it's a station channel 7. 7-1 would be their regular signal in digital. 7-2 could be a 24/7 weather channel that's constantly updated during the day, so that if you want to know if you have to wear an overcoat or take an umbrella, you don't have to wait for the news show. Some of them also have 24/7 news. They have children's programming, they have health, they have religion, they have how-to programming, they have all kinds of educational programs. Some of them provide programming of networks other than the network that's the primary affiliation of the station on these multicast channels. So what it really does is it provides broadcasters substantially more tools to meet the needs and problems of their communities. And just alone in Minnesota, I know of at least 9 stations that are multicasting, and they're multicasting the type of program that I've articulated just now. So again, the deal with digital is you get a better picture, you get a clearer picture, you get much more diverse programming from which to choose, and I want to stress that it's absolutely free. It's free over-the-air programming. We get questions at some of these sessions, okay, what's the fee going to be every month? And people are, you know, they kind of look at you skeptically when you say, no, it's free, but it's over-the-air programming. Once you set yourself up to get it, you're good to go for the long term. So the question arises, who's going to be affected by the digital transition? People that subscribe to a paid subscription service like cable or satellite will be okay, and they will have to do absolutely nothing with regard to every set that's hooked up to the service. And I say that with that, you know, the Washington fine print there at the end, for which I apologize. But a lot of people subscribe to cable or satellite and they don't want to pay for a converter box on each TV. So they may hook up the service to their TV in their family room or their living room, but in the bedroom or in the kitchen or in the garage, they use an over-the-air antenna. Folks in that latter category may have to do something, and I'll talk about that in a minute. Also, a number of satellite subscribers get their over-the-air local programming as a part of their service. It's called local to local, and they usually get charged about $5 a month more for that service. But a number of subscribers would prefer to use an over-the-air antenna to get those channels. So, again, folks that get those channels over the air, even though they subscribe to satellite, may have to do something. The next group of people that don't have to do anything are people with television sets that have digital tuners in them. All TV sets have tuners in them, and what they do is they adapt the signal that comes from the antenna to something that can be displayed on the front of the TV set. And for the first 50, 60 years of television, because there was only analog delivery, TV sets had analog tuners. When digital started becoming a reality, manufacturers started making very high-end TV sets with digital tuners in them. And as this transition date became closer and established, Congress changed the law to say that all television sets with tuners had to have digital tuners if they were manufactured or imported after March 2007. But that's really not a hard and fast date, because somebody might have bought one of these newfangled TVs with a digital tuner before then, and to accommodate retailers that had inventory of TV sets that were delivered to them and to their stores before March 2007, we allowed them to sell off that inventory, provided that they warned consumers when they bought the TV sets that they didn't have digital tuners and they might have to do something as of February 17th. The best way for somebody to check to see if they have a digital tuner in their TV is if the TV is 5 years or older. It's extremely unlikely that it has a digital tuner. But you look at the markings on the TV set, it may say digital tuner, it may say high definition, it may say ATSC, which is the name of the technology that digital programming uses. If That's not successful. You can look in the owner's manual if you haven't thrown it out yet, which I do as soon as I unpack the TV. You can note the model number of the TV and go to the retailer where you bought it and ask him or her. You can look on the manufacturer's website. But the bottom line is that if you have a TV with a digital tuner, you're okay, regardless of whether you get your local stations by satellite, by cable, over the air. So who does that leave? That leaves people, and this is the group of people that we're trying to reach with this outreach, because they're going to have to do something by February 17th. It's people with older analog-only TV sets that receive the programming of their local full-power stations with antennas, either rooftop antennas or rabbit ears. And just to give you an idea, there are 13.6 million households in the United States, 11.9% of the households, that get their television programming over the air only. In Minnesota, that figure is substantially higher. It's 17.8%. Of the various markets in Minnesota, Duluth Superior has the highest percentage. It's 21.7%, which is nearly twice the national percentage. So these are the people that we're trying to reach. These are the people that, with regard to those sets, if they don't do something before the transition, when they turn the sets on the next day, they're not going to get their programming. So there are three options that these people can choose from to prepare themselves for the digital transition. One is to subscribe and hook these sets up to cable or satellite. You know, the good news is you get lots of programming options. The bad news is you write a check every month. But people, that's an option for people. The second option is for them to replace their analog-only TV sets with TV sets with digital tuners. And one thing that I want to stress is that people don't have to spend $4,000 and get a top-of-the-line, high-definition, 60-inch plasma TV set to continue to get the programming of their stations after the transition. There's another type of digital set called a standard-definition set that has a digital tuner in it. And it looks more like an older conventional tube set. And although it doesn't give you the extremely crisp, clear, high-definition picture that you get with a more expensive plasma or LCD set, you do get all of the programming of your stations and will continue to receive all the programming, including these multicast channels, and they will be in better definition with a better picture quality than you got with analog. The third thing that you can do is hook up your television set, your analog set, to what's known as a converter box. This box is my constant companion. It has more frequent flyer miles, I think, than anybody or anything in the country. And this is a converter box. What this does is these sell in stores for between $40 and $60 or $70. You need one of these boxes for every analog TV that's hooked up to an antenna. You can't use one box for your whole house, because what this has is this has a tuner in it that tunes in whatever particular station that you want to watch. And what this does is, and I won't subject you to a full demonstration, but what this does is you pull the antenna wire out of your TV, you plug it into a plug here on the back of the box that says in from antenna. Then you get another wire with the box, and you plug it into this jack, which says out to TV, and you plug that in your TV where the antenna used to be. And what it literally does is it takes a digital signal through the electronics in the box, it converts it to an old analog signal, and then it gives that to your TV so your TV can read it. And what you get with each of these converter boxes, you get a remote control. It leads you to a menu, and what you do is, with your antenna and your TV hooked up to the box, it has step-by-step instructions. You push a button, and what it does is it scans all of the channels in the community and plugs in and identifies and memorizes all of the digital channels that you can get on the box. And one of my favorite parts of these demonstrations is I always get somebody from the audience to hook up the box, to show them, you know, that anybody can do it, although I tell them even a lawyer can hook these up. It's really not hard. But what you do is you ask the people, how many channels do you get with your antenna now? And they usually say like five or six. And it's very dramatic as the thing scans, you see a line go through all the frequencies, and there's like a running total tally, like the Jerry Lewis telephone of how many channels you can get. And they're amazed, because like I was in Chicago last week, and people said they could get 7 channels, and we were at a community center, and it ended up that they could get 34 digital channels. And they really are good quality pictures. So that's the other option, cable or satellite, upgrade the TV, or get a converter box. One thing that I wanted to mention is the concept of pass-through boxes. The digital transition date only applies to full power broadcast stations, but there's a second type of television station that serves areas and serves states, including Minnesota, and these are what are known as low power television stations. Minnesota has a total of 220 low power stations that provide service, and there are basically two types of low power stations. There's a low power television station, which is like a full power station, but it operates at lower power, so it serves a smaller area. And these stations provide great diversity in the programming that's available to people, because they often provide niche programming. The other type of a low power station is a translator station, and that's a station that again operates at lower power, but what it does is it takes the signal of a full power station, rebroadcasts it on another channel, so that people in more distant areas that can be reached by the full power station can watch the programming of the low power station. The reason that I'm telling you all this is that because these stations don't have a transition date yet, although they will have one, we're working on it at the commission now, most of them will continue to broadcast in analog after February 17th when all the full power stations switch to digital. The earliest converter boxes block analog signals. So if you hooked up one of these boxes, you could watch full power stations, but it would block the low power stations. There's a second kind of a converter box that has been developed, and there are hundreds of, well not hundreds, but a substantial number of these boxes on the market that have a feature called analog pass-through. And they don't sell for any more than boxes without this feature. I urge you to urge your constituents, when you're buying a converter box, just to be on the safe side, get one with analog pass-through. It's marked on the outside of the box. If there's any question, they should talk to their salesperson, and they'll find out, they'll be able to confirm that it's the box that they need. Let me talk a little bit about the NTIA coupon program that I'm sure you're all familiar with, particularly in light of the press that it's had over the last couple of weeks. When Congress established the digital transition date, it recognized that it would be a hardship on a number of people to take whatever steps are necessary to change the equipment that they use to watch TV to be able to receive all their stations after February 17th. So it created a coupon program with the objective being that every household in the country was entitled to 2 $40 coupons, each of which they could apply to the cost of a converter box. And people could apply online, over the phone, or by paper application. NTI would send you 2 coupons. They would send you a list of all of the converter boxes in the program that had been approved, including which ones had passed through and which ones didn't. And based on your zip code, they would advise you of local brick-and-mortar retailers in your area where you could buy the boxes. What the coupons look like is this. This is one of them that I have that I didn't use. As you can see, it looks like a credit card. And on the bottom of the coupon, it has an expiration date. A person that gets these coupons has 90 days from the time that NTIA mails them to use them. If you take it on the 91st day, it's as if you're overdrawn on your bank account or your credit card's been canceled, and it's without value. So it was very important for people to use these coupons in a timely manner, because if they didn't, they couldn't reapply for another coupon. The 90-day use period was necessary because even though the program was funded with $1.34 billion, if you do the math, that's not enough to give every household in the country $80. So what NTIA has been doing is they've kept track of these coupons, which ones have been redeemed and which ones have not been and have expired. And for an expired coupon where somebody doesn't use it within 90 days, they fold that $40 back into the program and finance another coupon and send it out to somebody else. Historically, in the beginning of the program, the redemption rate ran around 50%. It went a little higher, went to about 52%. With the imminence of the transition date, the redemption rate is about 60%. But the problem that NTIA has encountered is that the combination of the millions and millions of coupons that are on circulation now that haven't matured yet have prevented them by law from looking to any of those funds to finance future coupons. In addition, the rate of coupon applications has skyrocketed as the transition date has approached. In December alone, they got requests for 7.2 million coupons. So what they did a week ago Sunday, they announced that they had hit the wall and they didn't have any more money for coupons. And what they were doing was they were going to take applications from people for coupons, but put people on a waiting list. And everybody got a place in line and a reference number, and they were going to issue the coupons first come, first serve based on your place in the waiting line as coupons came in, and it was clear that they weren't going to be used because the 90 days had run. To date, since they put that procedure in place, I believe they've redeemed in excess of 400,000 coupons. I'm sorry, 400,000 coupons, with the $40 that have come in for each coupon that hasn't been redeemed in a timely manner. So that will continue. There is also legislation introduced or under discussion on Capitol Hill to increase the funding of the coupon program to get the money in, because everybody is very, very sensitive to how important this coupon program is, particularly for people that will be most vulnerable to the digital transition. You know, less wealthy people, the elderly, non-English speakers who might have taken some time to apply and haven't been able to do it real early. So all I can tell you is everybody is working extremely hard on that to get the coupon program flowing again. One last thing I wanted to mention about hooking up these converter boxes is the idea of hooking up antennas, because all of these converter boxes have to have antennas. We get all these calls at the FCC from people who say, I don't understand it. I got the coupon, and I went out and bought the box, and I hooked up the box, and I don't get anything. And people think that they're like cable boxes, you don't need antennas, but you have to have an antenna. What we tell people is, before you go out and spend top dollar on a new antenna and buy the best antenna you can, try the antenna that you have in your house with either the analog TV with a converter box or with a new TV with a digital tuner. Generally speaking, if you get a good picture on channels 2 through 51, which are the channels that digital stations are going to operate on, you should be okay for digital. What you may have to do, particularly if you have rabbit ears, is tweak them a little bit and move them around the room. Generally speaking, the higher you elevate the rabbit ears, the better the picture you get. If you move them to an exterior wall or by a window, you'll get a better picture. Sometimes people have to replace rabbit ears with over-the-air antennas. And folks with over-the-air antennas sometimes have to reorient the antennas because some stations are operating in digital from transmitter sites at a different location than they operated in analog. One other thing to mention is that there are two types of channels that are used for television broadcasting in the digital age. There are VHF channels, which are channels 2 through 13, and UHF channels, which are 14 through 51. They require different elements in an antenna, and a lot of stations are switching from a VHF analog channel to a UHF digital channel. But viewers won't know that because there's a technology that if you've been watching channel 7 all your life, even though they're switching to channel 41 for digital, on your TV set, it'll say channel 7, which is a very long-winded way of saying that when people look at their antennas, they should make sure that they have both elements. Usually on a rabbit ears, the VHF element are two bars that go up like this, and a UHF element is either a flat plate or an oval-shaped element. And outdoor antennas, it's the same deal. You have two elements in your antenna, and the UHF elements on outdoor antennas are most susceptible to deterioration from weather conditions like rain and wind and snow, and pieces can literally fall off the antenna over the years. A lot of folks may not have even used their UHF elements in the past when they've been watching their TV and analog, so that's something else for them to consider. There is a resource on the internet, and it's a website, antennaweb.org, A-N-T-E-N-N-A-W-E-B, one word, .org, where people can punch in their addresses, and they can, and you can, the site will come up with a recommendation of what type of antenna they should use. As is the case with many things in life, spending top dollar for an antenna may not get you the best picture. For example, some antennas have built-in amplifiers to amplify the signal, but if you're relatively close to a transmitter site, your picture actually is degraded. So what we recommend people to do is try what you got, move it around, and see if that makes it any better. If you're going to upgrade, don't upgrade at the top of the line. Make an informed decision. And you can always, most electronics stores have liberal return policies. If, you know, a lower-end antenna doesn't do the trick for you, get one up on the food chain, you know, and see what'll work for you. All I can say is that, the digital transition is rapidly approaching. One last column, as you've probably seen in the papers, there is some discussion on Capitol Hill of extending the transition date from February 17th to sometime in the future. And I believe Jay Rockefeller, who is the incoming chairman of the Senate Commerce Committee, has proposed or is proposing legislation to extend it to mid-June. There's a lot of spirited discussion on Capitol Hill about whether that's a good idea or whether that's a bad idea. I have no idea how it's going to come out, but as evidenced by the fact that I'm here in Minnesota, we're taking the position that until that deadline changes, February 17th is the deadline, and our obligation under the law is to do everything that we can to get people ready for the transition date as Congress establishes it. So our message to people is to get a converter box if you need one, or subscribe to cable, or get a new digital set. Whatever you decide to do if you're in one of those categories of folks that have to do something. But don't wait until after the transition, because to the extent that you have to adjust your antenna or figure out how to tune the channels or whatever, if you wait until February 18th, you're not going to have access to the programming of your local stations because they're going to switch to digital. So we urge people to take action, even in light of the problems with the coupon program. Consider maybe buying one converter box. You don't need a coupon to get the converter box. You know, go down to your retailer, buy one converter box, hook up for your primary TV set, and you can apply for coupons and get them for any other converter boxes that you'll have to get to get your TV sets ready. So I appreciate your attention and your time. Anything you can do to pass this information on to your constituents would be terrific and greatly appreciated. I believe in your packets you have a resource list that we put together. Just to emphasize one thing, we have a website dedicated at the FCC. It's dtv.gov, where we have about 25 publications on every type of aspect of the digital transition. How to hook up a converter box, how to hook up a converter box to a VCR, how to pick out an antenna, what cable subscribers have to do, you know, the deal with low power stations and pass-through boxes. Everything on the site is available in English and Spanish. It can be downloaded, or obviously it can be viewed on your computer. And some of our most popular publications are translated in up to 20 languages. So we have that. We have a toll-free number that you can call, which is 1-888-CALL-FCC, which translates to 1-888-225-5322. The website for NTIA, if people want to apply for the coupons, is dtv2009.gov. There's a phone-in number, which is 1-888-DTV-2009. But our recommendation and our experience is that particularly in light of the waiting list, if folks can get access to a computer, that's the most expeditious way to apply and get your name in the waiting list and also get a reference number that you can use to go back on the website and determine whether or not NTIA has sent on your coupon yet. So we stand ready to do anything we can to help you get the message out. We just want everybody in Minnesota to continue to get their stations after February 17th. And I'll be happy to answer any questions you have. I really appreciate you inviting me here and your time and attention.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Freeman. Members, any questions at this point? We'll point out that the resources are quite good. I've had a chance to go online and look at some of this information. It's very helpful and self-explanatory once you get into it. Representative Taylor?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I do have a couple of questions, one of which may not be one that you could answer, but perhaps someone else will be able to have that answer. And I'm just wondering to what extent senior programs within the state have been working with their populations. And again, I say this may not be your question, but someone else. I'm wondering, like our senior linkage line, all of our senior programs, particularly for the rural, more distant areas, I'm just wondering how much attention they have paid, if you know, at this point to helping those populations make the switch. Because I do think that, I'm sure you've noticed or thought of this as well, but most likely the folks that will be having more trouble with this also do not have access to the website.
Right.
So they're not going to be able to use this handy sheet.
I can tell you other folks may speak with regard to state efforts. I can tell you that the senior citizen group is one of our target areas in terms of potential vulnerability, and we've had substantial meetings at assisted care homes as well as formal town hall meetings with senior citizen groups to get the information to them. We've put out materials, posters, information sheets at a number of these assisted living homes. What we always do at these sessions is we have at least one or two people with laptops with an internet connection so that if folks want to sign up for the coupon program or get additional information and they don't have access to the internet, we can sign them up on the spot. Also, last week the FCC entered into 10 agreements with 10 grassroots organizations to help folks out throughout the country, and one of those organizations was AARP, which is going to put together a national call center to not only spread information to senior citizens about preparing for the transition, but to provide person-to-person assistance when people get through to the short strokes of actually hooking up these converter boxes and adjusting their antennas. I also know that our folks on the ground who are going to target television markets throughout the country have made it a point of partnering with a number of senior citizen organizations, and I'm sure that that's the case here in Minnesota, but unfortunately I don't have those specifics.
All right, very good. Well, thank you for your testimony, Mr. Friedman. We have a few others to testify, so I think we'll move along and appreciate you coming out and sharing your information with us.
Thank you.
Mr. Jim Dubois from the Minnesota Broadcasters Association, if you want to come on down and begin your testimony.
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you so much for the opportunity to appear before you this morning. Joining me is my colleague at the Cable Association. I'm going to go first, and Mr. Martin will follow up. I will try not to repeat any of the testimony that Mr. Friedman from the FCC just gave you and focus primarily on the consumer outreach efforts that we're doing here in Minnesota in the broadcasting industry. As you have seen from watching...
just for the record, just identify yourself.
Certainly, Mr. Chair. My name is Jim Dubois. I'm the President and CEO of the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. I'm sure that those of you who have been watching television for these past months have not lost out on the fact that a major change is coming to American television, we think, on February 17, 2009 at 11:59 p.m., and we've been doing our best as an industry to get that message out to the viewers. Stations have been airing public service announcements and long-form programming as well to educate viewers on the DTV transition. Television station staff, representatives of the Minnesota Broadcasters Association have made hundreds of presentations to community organizations over the past several months to explain how viewers can continue to receive free over-the-air programming after February 17, 2009. We've established some wonderful partnerships with cable, satellite, consumer electronics retailers, nonprofit community organizations, as well as the federal, state, and local governments to educate and inform the public. Our outreach efforts will accelerate as the transition date rapidly approaches. Our efforts to educate consumers are ongoing. This past summer, the Minnesota Broadcasters Association partnered with locally based Best Buy and Apex Digital to produce and distribute a 30-minute public service program called DTV Simplified. The program has aired and is continuing to air on hundreds of TV stations nationwide. Many of the stations are airing the program on multiple occasions. DTV Simplified is also available on YouTube. During the Minnesota State Fair this past summer, the Minnesota Broadcasters Association partnered with Minnesota 4-H, Twin Cities Public Television, and Best Buy to staff a DTV educational display. 4-H youth ambassadors and volunteers from the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and local TV stations provided hands-on assistance to fairgoers who needed help ordering converter box coupons or assistance with antenna and converter box installation. Thousands of brochures with DTV information were distributed to fairgoers in English and Spanish. We also had handouts available in other languages as well. Minnesota 4-H continues to provide assistance to Minnesotans who need assistance with making the DTV transition. There actually are 4-H DTV teams available across Minnesota to provide education to community groups and organizations. And if you go on the 4-H website, you can actually click on your county to see where the closest DTV assistance team is located. As the date of the transition draws near, broadcasters and their partners in the cable, satellite, nonprofit, retail sectors, and government sectors are gearing up to help ensure as smooth a transition to digital as possible. A series of simulated analog signal shutdowns, we call them DTV soft tests, have already taken place and will continue to take place over the next several weeks. Viewers who are still watching an analog signal will be alerted that their TV service will end at midnight on February 17th. They'll also receive some instructions on the steps they need to take to receive digital programming. Viewers will be directed to telephone and online resources that can answer questions and provide assistance when needed. The Minnesota Broadcasters Association is providing a toll-free number for DTV questions. In addition, there will be phone banks in operation during primetime DTV soft testing later this month. A national phone bank has been created by the National Association of Broadcasters that is currently active, and it can actually refer callers to the national line to local stations and to local assistance centers for DTV help. Broadcasters are working with the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights and local community service organizations to establish DTV assistance centers in the Twin Cities. These assistance centers will help people with converter box issues. In other words, people can actually come into the center, bring in a converter box and antenna, and get instructions as to how to install it. We're also now trying to get boots on the ground. This is the biggest thing we're seeing. We think that the public awareness is certainly there. The concern now is how do we address the issues of folks who absolutely cannot connect the converter box themselves. So we have gotten such calls. So hopefully using the resources of 4-H, an organization called the American Radio Relay League, which is an association of ham radio operators, and a number of other community groups, we actually intend, once the assistance centers are up and running, to have people who can go into households and help connect the converter box sets and hopefully resolve antenna issues. So basically, our industry, again, partnering with our great partners in the retail sector. Best Buy has been a wonderful partner, the Minnesota Cable Association. Actually, I should credit the Cable Association, too. It's extremely important during this transition that broadcasters work in concert with the cable and satellite companies. And Mr. Martin from the Cable Association, I believe, organized what I think was one of the first, if not the first, meetings bringing broadcasters and cable together in the United States. So we continue to work hard. We, again, as Mr. Friedman said, we're assuming the date is February 17th. Our intelligence in D.C. Gives strong indication that it will be delayed. But for the time being, we assume that February 17th is the date certain, and we're prepared to do what is necessary to move forward with that transition. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Dubois. Mr. Martin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Mike Martin. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Cable Association. My object here is to bring you up to date on the cable company's role in the digital conversion that's coming. This project has been in the making for over 5 years, so I can assure you that there's been extensive preparation. The cable television industry has been actively involved in the transition as a supporting member of the National DTV Coalition of Broadcasters, Manufacturers, Satellite Companies, and other video industry participants. In fact, we were the first to begin public service messages on this topic soon after the transition date was determined. The goal of our participation has been to facilitate a smooth transition from analog broadcast to digital for over-the-air viewers. We've been supporting extensive public information campaigns and finally keeping our subscribers fully aware of the changes and aware of the misunderstandings and some of the myths that are out there in the public's mind. Some of those myths are interesting. One of them is that no TVs will work after February 17th. And of course, we know that all digital television sets will work. And in fact, since 2007, it's been hard to purchase anything but a digital set. All television sets connected to cable or satellite will work, and new digital sets not connected will work without additional equipment. Another myth is that only digital sets will work. That's not true. Sets with special converters, as we've seen, and again, those hooked up to cable or satellite will continue to receive signal. Finally, another myth that we hear from our customer service people is that the transition will mean that every TV will be able to receive high-definition television. Sorry, that's not the case. You'll still need a high-definition TV to get HD channels. To counter these and other misunderstandings, the cable television has undertaken several principal initiatives to build awareness. Nationally, the industry has been committed to public service ads on transition valued at over $200 million to build a broad public awareness. Locally, for example, Comcast has run informational spot ads some 11,000 times on various cable networks. And while national and local advertising has been effective, it is only one of the elements. Other initiatives have included informational meetings with city officials and cable commissions. The companies have been doing monthly bill inserts every month since April. We put things in community newsletters and have website links. In some cases, cable companies have provided local community access channels with instructional videos and other PSAs on the transition for airing on those local channels. Locally, cable companies have maintained contact with the broadcasters on the technical details and engineering considerations. As Mr. Dubois said, last March we had the first meeting in the country between local cable engineers and broadcast engineers, and it was very, very helpful. Every cable company has taken on extensive training of their customer service representatives to ensure that our customers are getting accurate and timely information. Although our message to our customers is clear and pretty simple, there are these misunderstandings which we're trying to clarify. Most importantly, cable companies continue to assure their customers that televisions receiving cable service will continue to receive those signals uninterrupted and without the need for additional equipment. The bottom line is that cable subscribers will not need to make any changes or connections to a television connected to their local cable system. And that concludes my remarks. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Martin. Any questions? Representative Kiffmeyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Thank you, Mr. Martin, and to Mr. DeBlay for being here today and taking your time to give us this information. I really appreciate it. Certainly in my district, we have many situations like this, and some of the confusion you mentioned is very relevant. Our main TV is 25 years old, and I doubt it's digital. There are many others in my community just like that. And so I think the question really has been, you know, do I need to do something or not? And the confusion rests more not so much in the solution. They all know about those boxes. They all know about even the TVs and all that stuff. What they are confused about is, do I need to do anything? It's a really odd situation. And in listening to you, my understanding from this, I just want to be sure I really do understand, because I have to communicate with them. If you have an antenna, it's capable of receiving both analog and digital signals.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, the antenna itself is capable of receiving analog and digital signals. The question is whether the television you have is capable of receiving analog and digital. And as Mr. Friedman indicated before, the key is to take a look at the set. And as you say, a 25-year-old set, we can guarantee you, will not receive digital. Anything manufactured in the past 5 years, it's a little iffy. But typically on the set, it will say ATSC, which stands for Advanced Television Systems Committee. Mr. Friedman? Absolutely. Okay, good. Wanted to make sure I have the acronym correctly. That is a set that will receive digital signals. NTSC is the old analog acronym. So the bottom line is you have to make sure that your particular set is either an analog or a digital set. The antenna really doesn't matter except for, as Mr. Friedman said, it has to have both elements for VHF and UHF. But the real clue is to know whether your television, the set you currently own, is analog or digital. If it's a digital set, assuming that you're already getting signals, you are set. But if it's analog, you need to go and buy a converter box or subscribe to satellite or cable or buy a new digital television. Hopefully that somewhat answered your question.
Follow-up, Representative Kiffmeyer?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Mr. Martin, indeed, I wanted to be sure to start from the premise of clarifying in regards to the antenna because there are some folks in my community who think they need a new antenna. And so it's really important for them to understand the problem is not an antenna or rabbit ears, that the issue really is their TV. However, working with many of these seniors, and you mentioned those letters on the back of the TV in font size 8, in shiny aluminum, on the back of the TV that has been parked in the same spot for a long, long time, that is not that easy. I think the issue is how to determine exactly, because you're right, the issue is analog TV or not. So I think it's really important in your communications and in many of your other things, helping these folks to sort out their TV, is it analog or digital, is really the crux of the issue because it's not the antenna, the issue is not the signal, the issue is really their TV. Question for you is, have you focused on some of those issues of assisting people in how to know the situation with their TV? I think that really is the crux of the issue for my people. What is the way that I can help them other than the little 65, 70-year-old lady crawling behind and trying to read those 8 font size numbers?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Dubois?
Representative Kiffmeyer, very good questions. A couple of things. We have been doing some long-form programming. The PSAs that you've seen many of them, the calls across your screen talking about the transition date, those are just to boost awareness. Obviously, they're not going to help anybody know exactly what they need to do or give specific instruction. The longer form programming does go into more detail as to how to tell whether or not your television is analog or digital. But I mentioned in my testimony something called an analog soft test, and I'll explain in greater detail what that is. Essentially, as Mr. Friedman said, for a number of years, every television station in the U.S. has been operating on two frequencies. The old analog frequency, the new digital frequency. With the soft test, what the stations do is they supply a different program to the analog channel. And for those of you who may have seen the test, we just had one on Monday here in the Twin Cities from 6:30 to 6:35 p.m. There was one on December 17th. We're going to be doing a series of soft tests on Monday, the 26th of January, statewide. And there will be call centers, too, that will enable viewers to call a specific question. But in the soft test, what happens is we throw up a graphic of a snowy TV screen. And it says, if you have seen this, your television is not ready for the transition on February 17th. And then it gives very specific instructions about the converter box, getting cable or satellite, and a series of phone numbers. So that's how we kind of hope to reach out. Obviously, logistically, it's pretty difficult to get into everyone's homes, but at least this is one way where if people see this, they should understand that the particular set they're watching is not ready and that something needs to be done. As I mentioned earlier, we do have concerns that there are some people who are not going to be able to make this transition on their own. So Twin Cities Public Television has had a great program called Help Your Neighbor, and essentially the message has been, you know, make sure the folks who, your friends and relatives, people who live around you are ready for the transition. If there's somebody you're aware of who may need some additional assistance, help them out. We hope through the assistance centers, the 4-H DCV teams, the ham radio operators, that we'll be able to get some people out in the field and help. The DCV assistance centers that the Leadership Council on Civil Rights are putting together, I think, are also going to be great grassroots organizations for getting people out in the field. But I agree with you. I think the biggest concern is people, A, knowing what they have to do, and B, then being able to do what they have to do. And I have concerns about a lot of community members who may not quite understand the steps taken. Another concern that has arisen lately, unfortunately, we haven't heard incidents of it in this particular area, but in some parts of the country, we're hearing of scams, people calling up seniors, is your television ready? Well, we'll drive a truck into your neighborhood and sell you a converter box out of the back of the truck. If you hear that from your constituents, you know, please let us know, but that is a concern. Though also, I think, I've heard of some scams involving the coupons themselves. And speaking of helping neighbors and the coupon, the current issue with the coupon funding, one thing we should make very clear is no one can sell the coupon. It's illegal to sell the coupon. However, there's nothing illegal about giving the coupon away. So we know that a lot of people ordered coupons that are not going to use them. And our other message is going to be in the next few weeks, if you have the coupons, if they're in a drawer somewhere, if they're buried on a desk, and you're not going to use them before they expire, please ask a friend or neighbor if they can use them.
Very good. And just, Mary, we have till 10 o'clock in the room today, and I want to make sure we get our retailers' testimony. Thank you for your testimony. Thanks for your questions, Representative Kiffmeyer. I think those are good ones. I will note on the resources provided by, I think it was Mr. Friedman, Volunteers of America and AARP both have assistance that can be provided, particularly to seniors, that we should all take advantage of with our constituents and make sure that they're aware of. Again, thank you for your testimony, and let's move on to our last set of testifiers. Welcome, and if you would introduce yourselves for the record, begin your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members, good morning. My name is Buzz Anders, and I represent the Minnesota Retailers Association, and thank you for the opportunity to speak today about the digital television transition. As you've heard, the digital television transition is one of the most significant events to take place in television history. And retailers play a very critical role in that transition because they and their employees are on the front lines with consumers every day trying to provide them with information about the three choices they have as it relates to what the consumer might do with this transition. This is especially important because Minnesota has one of the highest percentages of over-the-air households in the nation. There are 100 retailers in Minnesota with 577 store locations that are participating in the NTIA's TV Converter Box Coupon Program, and that includes a lot of small retailers in the communities as well as most of the chains, including Best Buy, Radio Shack, Circuit City, Target, Kmart, Sears, Walmart, and so on. There's also approximately 35 online sellers and 11 retailers that will take the orders by phone if you want to complete the transaction that way. Now, how do you find out about where to get a coupon? You simply have to go to www.dtv2009.gov, and that will list the locations of stores within your area with addresses and how far away they are so that you'll know where you need to go. Mr. Chair, I checked with the addresses of some of the community members, and I found out that you, Mr. Chair, have 54 stores within 10 miles of your home. The Vice Chair, Representative Mason, you have 69 within 10 miles. I guess it's better to live in Eagan, right? Representative Hoppe, you have 25 within 10 miles. Representative Brown, you have 51 within 10 miles. Paul, Representative Gardner, you have 45 within 10 miles. Representative Kiffmeyer, you have 8 within 10 miles. Representative Lilly, you have 66 within 10 miles. Representative Saylor, you have, I'm sorry to say, 20 within 40 miles. So there's a disadvantage to living farther out.
I'm shocked.
And sorry, Mr. Eloff and Ms. Faust and Mr. Reich, I didn't have your addresses. I was going to look up for you as well. If I miss someone, I do have your locations near your home. And Mr. Hoppe, did I forget you? 25. Yeah, okay. So, pardon me?
Representative Hoppe lives in a secret undisclosed location.
Oh, okay.
I can show you where I live, but then I'd have to kill you.
Okay. I'd rather you not tell me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Every technological change that comes about with glitches and blips, and this transition is going to take a lot of cooperation between retailers, government entities, nonprofits, manufacturers, and so on. And we in the retail industry are willing to partner with you and look forward to partnering with you to help make this as easy a transition as possible. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn the mic over to Mike Hiltner from Best Buy.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Mike Hiltner, and I'm Government Relations Manager at Best Buy. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today to discuss the digital television transition. A lot's already been covered, so I'll just focus on what Best Buy has been doing as a retailer to help consumers through February 17th. As background, Best Buy is a leading retailer of consumer electronics and services. We have about 1,000 U.S. stores, including 28 here in Minnesota. And we also have a phone channel and online channel, and we reach millions of customers and consumers annually. As my colleague Mr. Anderson mentioned in his testimony, this transition is going to require partnership between broadcasters, manufacturers, retailers, government, nonprofits, and consumers as well. Retail plays a critical role in that we're on the front lines with the consumer. They're the folks, you know, your constituents we see in the store every day asking questions, looking for a converter box perhaps or another solution. I want to point your attention to the packets we handed out earlier. In there includes a bunch of background on the transition, which you've already been informed on, but there's also a tip card in here that you might keep handy by the phone when you get calls from constituents. It has the phone numbers on there, as well as the three options people have to be prepared, so that might be handy as well. Then I've also included our in-store brochure that we provide for people who visit our retail locations. So that's just background information for you. Let me just touch on a couple of things now and try to highlight what we've been doing on the retail side. Our DTV consumer education actually started in early 2006, so we've been educating consumers on this transition for nearly 3 years now through a variety of means. We have in-store signage, the brochures I've pointed out. We've got a dedicated phone line that Best Buy staff where people can call and ask questions, try to understand what the transition is, what it means to them, what they need to do, do they need a converter box or not, some of the questions that Representative Kissmeyer was asking before. But equally important, they're able to redeem their coupon and order a box online, and we think this is particularly important for some of the vulnerable populations who can't get to a retail location, don't live near a retail location, and just want to order a box and have it delivered. And that number is on your tip card as well. A couple things we've done over the last couple of years that we think were important. The first major step was in October of 2007. We actually pulled our analog television inventory off our shelves voluntarily and stopped selling it. We thought that was important for our customers so that they knew if they're in the market to buy a new television that they wouldn't have to worry about whether or not it was going to be ready for the transition. Second, we were one of the first retailers to participate in the coupon program and accept the coupons. We've been selling the converter boxes for over a year. We currently have three models in stock, and they're all coupon eligible. And they all have the analog pass-through feature, which was mentioned earlier. Whether you need the feature or not, it comes on the box. You don't need to worry about whether or not you'll be able to view those low-power stations through the box. And that's included feature at no extra charge. Consumers can also get the coupon applications in our stores and get advice on how to hook up the box. They can get advice on some of the antenna issues. Our advice to consumers has been, as mentioned before, try your existing antenna first. If it doesn't work, then look at upgrading. And by upgrading, you don't need to spend $100 or even $50 on an antenna. Some, you know, $10, $20 might work just as well. Finally, we have a lot of information on our website, and we've got three, BestBuy.com, GeekSquad.com, and AskABlueShirt.com. And we put all this information on there, as well as provide two-minute miracle videos, we call them, where people can watch and see how a converter box is installed and get help that way. We've also done a number of nonprofit and community partnerships, either by providing financial support or training to nonprofit organizations, including Minnesota 4-H, Minnesota ACORN, and industry groups like the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. And that's been important. We did an event in May where we trained the trainers, where we invited Minnesota nonprofits to come to our corporate campus, and our Geek Squad trained them on how to install a converter box and understand the transition, because a lot of these organizations can reach populations more effectively than others, or than we can. And if they're already, you know, an organization like Meals on Wheels or similar organization like that already visits seniors every day, we think it's an effective way for them, if they're dropping off a meal, to say, oh, by the way, are you prepared for the transition? Do you need help moving your TV, hooking up the antenna, hooking up the box, that kind of thing? So we really focused on train-the-trainer type events. Lastly, I just want to touch on the topic of recycling. This has been an important issue for us as a company for a number of years. And while the transition itself isn't going to automatically obsolete all these analog TVs, two of the three options people have allow you to keep your existing TV, right? If you buy a converter box or subscribe to cable or satellite. But, of course, there'll be people who will purchase new digital televisions and wonder what to do with their old analog set. We provide a number of easy recycling options and responsible recycling options at our stores for people, or if we deliver a TV, we'll take one away. So I just wanted to make sure you're aware that that we're aware of that and provide these options to consumers. Thanks again for the opportunity, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that we have.
Very good. Thanks for your testimony. Members, any questions at this point? Seeing none. Oh, sorry about that. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Mr. Chairman and members, and thank you, Mr. Hiltner, mm-hmm. and Mr. Anderson, for being here today and giving us the good information. It's good to hear all of the community things that are going on to help get this word out. One of the questions I have, again, follows up on the antenna situation, and this is a requested question that they've asked me to ask this one, and that is, if you do have an antenna, do you need to change it at all in order to receive this digital signal, or you just leave your antenna alone and just like it was before, and that signal will come in, you don't have to move your antenna or rearrange it, or, you know, February in Minnesota, it's a little icy and cold up there in that roof. So people are just concerned that if you're switching to this digital, do they have to go do anything to their antennas?
Mr. Hiltner?
Mr. Chairman, members, on the indoor antenna, it's likely you'll have to move it around a little bit to try to test to see where you might get the best signal, depending on, you know, everything from where your house is, surrounded by, could impact that to what room your TV is in, if it's in a basement room. So there might need to be an adjustment made there. I think it's less likely on an outdoor antenna that you'd need to make any adjustment. The resource that was pointed out earlier, the website antennaweb.org, is good in that you can plug in your address and it will tell you which current analog and digital signals you should be able to receive in your where you live, in the address you plug in. And then you can figure out if you need to adjust the antenna accordingly. But there could be in some circumstances where you might need to adjust that antenna, certainly.
Generally, not need to adjust that antenna for the most part. I mean, there may be some circumstances, but most people ought to just leave their antenna alone, and if they have an issue, then take a look at it.
Mr. Hiltner?
Mr. Chairman, members, I think and generally, if your existing antenna works, it should work fine for digital. You might need to move it a little bit, and it's just going to be different for everybody, different depending on where you live and the room the TV is in. But the advice we give to everybody is try your existing antenna first. If you're not getting the channels you should be getting, then you need to do something. Either move the antenna a little bit, move it in a different room, or not a different room, move it in a slightly different location, get upgraded to a different antenna. Maybe you don't have the bulk elements you needed to need to upgrade to an antenna. And in some cases, particularly in rural areas, you may need to move to an outdoor antenna. And that's just reality. We think that will be an exception, however, not the rule.
Anything else, Professor?
Well, I just want to affirm again, because I know there are folks listening to this, and this is important for them, and I know you talked a little bit more about the indoor antenna, moving them around, but this question that was very specific was to outdoor antennas. So in outdoor antennas, that is not necessary to move them around, or if you've got a signal before and you have an outdoor antenna, just leave it alone. It's probably going to be just fine.
Mr. Chairman, members, I think it's less likely that you'll need to do anything with an outdoor antenna, but in some circumstances, you may need to do an adjustment. And if Mr. Friedman's still here and wants to offer advice on.
Well, if we have Mr. Friedman, if you want to just identify yourself real quickly.
Sure, I'm Bill Friedman, Associate Chief of the Media Bureau of the FCC. As I mentioned in my testimony, the issue of antennas is one that is extremely critical, because if you do everything that you have to do, you get a digital TV set or you get a converter box with an analog set, if the antenna's not picking up the signal, you're still in trouble. And there are just a couple points that I wanted to add. I agree absolutely that with regard to an antenna, what the person should first do, rather than going out and spending anything, is see if the antenna that they have does the trick. And with an indoor rabbit ears antenna, they probably want to move it around, because the slightest movement with digital signals can make a significant difference. They should double check with indoor and outdoor antennas to make sure that they have both UHF and VHF elements. One other consideration that comes into play when somebody hooks up one of these digital sets with an antenna is that they may not be able to get some of the stations that they have been receiving in analog, because those stations are not operating at full facilities. Although February 17th is the digital transition date and all of the stations are operating in digital, a number of them are operating at less than full power, because could be an example that they have a tower and they will be putting their digital antenna on top of the tower, but right now their analog antenna is on top of the tower and they don't want to disrupt the analog service until the very last minute. So they side mount the antenna on the side of the tower, which gives them a lower signal. Some other stations, because they have to coordinate with other stations that are doing changes and there's kind of a daisy chain effect, those stations may not be operating with full operating power. I know of a couple stations in Minnesota, for example, that are down to 50% of what their post-transition power is, which is a long way of saying that if somebody does everything that they think they're supposed to do, and they've been getting a good signal for a particular channel in analog, but they can't get the signal in digital, they may want to give the station a call and explain the situation, because what it may be is that the station hasn't gone to full facilities and won't until February 17th, or for a handful of stations in Minnesota, because they had particular problems, they're going to do it on a phased basis and do it sometime, upgrade sometime after February 17th and go full, like within 6 months or so. But just as, and that brings to mind another thing, which is what we tell people when they hook up the converter boxes and they scan the channels, they should do that periodically, particularly during the time before February 17th, because they'll see new stations popping up that they otherwise couldn't receive because they've gone to full facilities. Can I just mention one other thing about the coupon applications? Because I know particularly we talked about the elderly. The coupon application, whether you apply online or whether you do it over the phone or whether you do it in a paper application, is a very, very simple application. It asks four questions. It asks the person's name, their address, how they get their local TV signals, whether by subscription service like cable or satellite and over the air, and whether they want one or two coupons. We have found situations where there are scams, where people who are not authorized by this coupon program are asking for information like people's social security numbers, other private information. If somebody encounters that, it's not the bona fide program and they should run away. If somebody is trying to charge you for coupons, they're absolutely free, you should run away. If somebody shows up at the shopping center and is selling converter boxes out of the back of a truck, the NTIA has been very, very careful to filter the companies that want to sell these and be retailers to appropriate companies. So if it's not an appropriate company and it wasn't listed in the materials that you got with your coupons, run away. There's a lot of people that are trying to take advantage of folks, and we should be very careful to protect them.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Right, members, I think that's going to do it for today. Next week, we're going to be looking at some overview issues and perhaps some stakeholder testimony regarding telecommunications' ever-changing world. Thank you for your attention today. The meeting's now adjourned.